into right now.
He pulled a pair of disposable gloves out of his pocket.
I want to do a more thorough search. She didn't take a lot with her. Most of their clothes are still here.
He moved into the bedroom and turned the computer on. He opened files that looked promising.
Nothing to help us,
he finally said, shutting the computer off. She didn't have caller ID, and there were no messages on her machine. Bills and shopping lists were scattered across the kitchen counter. We rifled through them, knowing it was probably wasted effort. If there had been anything good, the intruder would have taken it. Now what? I asked.
Now we look at Evelyn's house.
Uh-oh. There's a problem with Evelyn's house. Abruzzi has someone watching it. Every time I stop by, Abruzzi shows up 10 minutes later.
Why would Abruzzi care that you're in Evelyn's house?
Last time I ran into him, he said he knew I was in it for the money, that I knew what the stakes were, and that I knew what he was trying to recover. I think Abruzzi's after something, and it's tied to Evelyn somehow. I think it's possible that Abruzzi thinks this thing is hidden in the house, and he doesn't want me snooping around.
Any ideas on what it is that he's trying to recover?
None, not a clue. I've been through the house, and I didn't find anything unusual. Of course, I wasn't looking for secret hiding places. I was looking for something to direct me to Evelyn. Ranger closed the front door behind us and made sure it was locked. The sun was low in the sky when we got to Evelyn's house. Ranger did a drive-by.
Do you know the people on this street?
Almost everyone. Some I know better than others. I know the woman next door to Dottie. Linda Clark lives 2 houses down. The Rojacks live in the corner house. Betty and Arnold Lando live across the street. The Landos are in a rental, and I don't know the family next to them. If I was looking for a snitch, my money would be on someone in the family next to the Landos. There's an old man who always seems to be home. Sits out on the porch a lot. Looks like he used to break kneecaps for a living about 100 years ago. Ranger parked in front of Carol Nadich's half of the house. Then we walked around the house and entered Evelyn's half through the back door. Ranger didn't have to break a window to get in. Ranger inserted a small slender tool into the lock, and 10 seconds later, the door was open. The house seemed just as I remembered. Dishes in the drain, mail neatly stacked, drawers closed. None of the signs of search that we'd seen in Dottie's house. Ranger did his usual walkthrough, starting in the kitchen, eventually moving upstairs into Evelyn's room. I was following behind him when I had a sudden flashback. Clown telling me about Annie's drawings. Scary drawings, Clown had said. Bloody. I wandered into Annie's room and flipped pages on the pad on her desk. The first page contained a house drawing similar to the one downstairs. After that came a page of scribbles and doodles. And then the childish drawing of a man. He was laying on the ground. The ground was red. Red spurted from the man's body. Hey, I called to Ranger. Come look at this. Ranger stood beside me and stared at the drawing. He turned the page and found a second drawing with red on the ground. 2 men were laying in the red. Another man pointed a gun at them. There were a lot of erasure marks around the gun. I guess guns are hard to draw. Ranger and I exchanged glances. It could just be television, I said.
It wouldn't hurt to take the pad with us, in case it isn't.
Ranger finished his search of Evelyn's room, moved to Annie's, and then to the bathroom. He stood hands on hips when he'd completed the search of the bathroom.
If there's something here, it's well hidden, he said. It would be easier if I knew what we were looking for.
We left the house the same way we came. Abruzzi wasn't waiting for us on the back porch, and Abruzzi wasn't waiting for us by Ranger's truck. I sat next to Ranger, and I looked up and down the street. No sign of Abruzzi. I was almost disappointed. Ranger rolled the engine over, drove to my parents' house, and parked behind my car. The sun had set, and the street was dark. Ranger cut his lights and turned to see me better.
Are you spending the night here again?
Yes, my apartment's still sealed. I imagine I'll get it back tomorrow.
Then what?
An involuntary shiver sent my lower back into spasm. My couch, had death cooties.
I see you're excited about returning, Ranger said.
I'll figure it out. Thanks for helping me today.
I feel cheated,
Ranger said.
Usually when I'm with you, a car explodes or a building burns down.
Sorry to disappoint.
Life is a bitch,
Ranger said. He reached out and grabbed me by my jacket sleeves, hauled me across the console, and kissed me. Now you kiss me? I said. What was the deal when we were alone in my apartment?
You had 3 glasses of wine, and you fell asleep.
Oh yeah, now I remember.
And you went into a panic attack at the thought of sleeping with me.
I was sprawled across the console, wedged behind the wheel, half sitting on Ranger's lap. His lips brushed against mine when he spoke, and his hands were warm against my t-shirt. You weren't entirely responsible for the panic, I told him. It was a sort of disastrous day.
Babe, you have a lot of disastrous days.
You sound like Morelli.
Morelli is a good guy, and he loves you.
And you? Ranger smiled. I was racked with another spine shiver. The porch light went on, and Grandma peered out at us from the living room window.
Saved by the grandma,
Ranger said, releasing me.
I'm going to wait for you to get in the house. I don't want anyone kidnapping you on my watch.
I opened the door and I jumped out, and I did a mental grimace, because getting kidnapped and or shot wasn't entirely off the radar screen. Grandma was waiting for me when I walked through the door.
Who's the guy in the cool truck?
Ranger.
That man is so hot, Grandma said. If I was 20 years younger...
If you were 20 years younger, you'd still be 20 years too old,
my father said. Valerie was in the kitchen helping my mother frost cupcakes. I got a glass of milk and a cupcake, and I sat at the table. How'd work go today? I asked Valerie.
I didn't get fired.
That's great. Before you know it, he'll be proposing marriage.
Do you think so?
I slid her a sideways look. I was joking.
It could happen,
Valerie said, dropping colored sprinkles on the cupcake. Valerie, you don't want to marry the first guy who comes along.
Yes, I do. As long as he has a house with 2 bathrooms, I swear to God, I don't care if he's Jack the Ripper.
I'm thinking about getting a computer so I can have cyber sex,
Grandma said. Anybody know how that works?
You go into a chat room, Valerie said, and you meet someone. And then you type dirty suggestions to each other.
That sounds like fun, Grandma said. How does the sex part happen?
You sort of have to do the sex part yourself.
I knew it was too good to be true, Grandma said. There's always a catch to everything.
It was morning. I was last in line for the bathroom, and I was beginning to appreciate Valerie's point of view. When faced with the choices of forever living with my parents, marrying Jack the Ripper, or going home to the cootie couch, I had to admit Jack the Ripper was looking pretty good. Okay, maybe not Jack the Ripper, but certainly Doug the Dullard could be tolerated. I was dressed in my usual outfit of jeans and boots and a stretchy shirt. I had my hair brushed out in curls and my mascara on heavy. All my adult life, I've hidden behind mascara. And if I'm really feeling insecure, I add eyeliner. Today was an eyeliner day. Plus, I painted my toenails. Bring out the heavy artillery, right? Morelli had called earlier and told me the crime scene tape was down. He'd made arrangements for a professional cleaning crew to go through the apartment using full-strength Clorox wherever needed. He thought they'd be done around noon. For all I cared, they could be done around November. I was in the kitchen having a final cup of coffee before starting my day, and Mabel appeared at the back door.
I just heard from Evelyn, she said. She called me and she said everyone was fine. She's staying with a friend, and she said not to worry.
She put her hand to her heart.
I feel so much better, and I felt better knowing you were looking for Evelyn. It gave me peace of mind. Thank you.
Did Evelyn say when she was coming home?
No. She said she wouldn't be back for Stephen's funeral, though. I guess there are hard feelings.
Did she say where she was? Did she mention the friend's name?
No, she was rushed. It sounded like she was calling from a store or a restaurant. There was a lot of noise in the background.
If she calls again, tell her I'd like to talk to her.
There isn't anything wrong, is there? Now that Stephen's gone, it seems like everything should be okay.
I'd like to talk to her about her landlord.
Are you interested in renting a house?
I might be. And that was the truth. The phone rang, and Grandma ran for it.
It's for you, she said, holding the phone out to me. It's Valerie.
I need help, Valerie said. You have to get over here in a hurry.
And she hung up. Gotta go, I said. Valerie's got a problem.
She used to be so smart, Grandma said. And then she moved to California. Think all that California sun dried her brain up like a raisin.
How bad could the problem be, I thought. More chicken soup in the computer? What would Clown care? He had no files to lose because he had no clients. I pulled into the lot and parked nose first in front of Clown's office. I looked into the big plate glass windows, but didn't see Valerie. I got out of the car, and Valerie came running from the laundromat side.
Over here, she said. He's in the laundromat.
Who?
Albert!
A row of turquoise plastic chairs lined the wall facing the dryers. Two old women sat side by side in the chairs, smoking, looking at Valerie, taking it all in. No one else was in the room. Where? I said. I don't see him. Valerie sucked in a sob and pointed to one of the large commercial dryers.
He's in there.
I looked more closely. She was right. Albert Clown was in the dryer. He was all scrunched up with his ass to the round porthole glass door, looking like poo stuck in the rabbit hole. Is he alive? I asked.
Yes, of course he's alive.
Valerie crept closer and knocked on the door.
At least, I think he's alive.
What's he doing in there?
The lady in the blue sweater thought she lost her wedding ring in the dryer. She said it was wedged into the back of the drum. So Albert went in to get it. But then somehow the door slammed shut, and we can't get it to open.
Jeez, why didn't you call the fire department or the police? There was movement in the drum, and a lot of muffled noise coming from Clown. The noise sounded like, no, no, no.
I think he's embarrassed,
Valerie said.
I mean, how would it look? Suppose somebody took a picture and it got in the paper. No one would ever hire him, and I'd be out of a job.
No one hires him now, I said. I tried the door. I tried pushing buttons. I looked for a safety latch. I'm scoring a big zero here, I said.
There's something wrong with that dryer,
the lady in the blue sweater said.
It's always getting stuck like that. There's something wrong with the lock. I wrote out a complaint about it last week, but nobody ever does nothing around here. The vending machine with the soap doesn't work either.
I really think we need help, I said to Valerie. I think we should call the police. There was more frantic movement and more of the no, no, no. And then there was something that sounded like a fart coming from inside the dryer. Valerie and I took a step back.
I think he's nervous, Valerie said.
Probably there was some sort of door release on the inside, but Clown was wedged in and couldn't turn to face the latch. I fished around in the bottom of my bag and found some change. I dropped a quarter into the slot, turned the heat down to low, and started the dryer tumbling. Clown's mumbling turned to shrieking, and Clown bounced around some, but for the most part he seemed fairly stable. After 5 minutes, the dryer stopped tumbling. You don't get a heck of a lot for a quarter these days. The door opened easy as anything, and Valerie and I pulled Clown out and stood him up. His hair was all fluffy, the kind of fluff you see on a baby robin. He was warm and smelled nice, like fresh ironing. His face was red, and his eyes were glassy.
I think I farted, he said.
You know what? The lady in the blue sweater said. I found my ring. It wasn't in the dryer after all. I put it in my pocket and forgot.
That's nice,
Clown said, his eyes unfocused, a little drool at the corner of his mouth. Valerie and I had him propped up by his armpits. "We're going to the office now," I said to Clown. "Try walking."
"Everything's still spinning. I'm out of the machine, right? I'm just dizzy, right? I can still hear the motor. I've got the motor in my head."
Clown moved his legs like Frankenstein's monster.
"I can't feel my feet," he said. "My feet fell asleep."
We half-dragged, half-pushed him back to the office and sat him in a chair.
"That was just like a ride," he said. "Did you see me going around in there? Like a funhouse, right? Like an amusement park. I ride all those rides. I'm used to that sort of thing. I sit right up front."
"Really?"
"Well, no, but I think about it."
"Isn't he cute?" Valerie said,
and she kissed him on top of his fluffy head.
"Gosh,"
Clown said, smiling wide.
"Gee."
Chapter 11. I declined on an offer of lunch from Clown, choosing instead to go to the bonds office. "Anything new?" I asked Connie. "I'm all out of FTAs."
"What about Benda?"
"I wouldn't want to cut in on Vinny."
"Vinny doesn't want him either,"
Connie said.
"It isn't that," Vinny yelled from his inner office. "I've got things to do, important things." "Yeah," Lula said. "He's got to slap his Johnson around."
"You better get that guy," Vinny yelled at me. "I'm not going to be happy if I'm out Bender's bond."
"I think there's something going on with Bender," Lula said. "He's one of them lucky drunks. It's like he's got a direct line to God. God protects the weak and the helpless, you know."
"God isn't protecting Bender," Vinny yelled. "Bender is still out there because I have a couple of useless boobs on my payroll."
"Okay, fine," I said. "We'll go get Bender."
"We?"
Lula asked. "Yeah, you and me."
"Been there, done that," Lula said. "I'm telling you, he's under God's protection, and I'm not sticking my nose into God's business."
"I'll buy you lunch."
"I'll get my bag," Lula said.
"One thing," I said to Connie. "I need some cuffs."
"No more cuffs," Vinny yelled. "What do you think, cuffs grow on trees?"
"I can't bring him in without cuffs."
"Improvise."
"Hey,"
Lula said, looking out the big plate glass front window.
"Check out the car that's just stopped by Stephanie's car. It's got a big rabbit and a big bear in it, and the bear is driving."
We all stared out the window.
"Uh-oh,"
Lula said.
"Did that rabbit just throw something at Stephanie's car?"
There was a loud ba-room. The CRV jumped several feet into the air and burst into flames.
"Guess it was a bomb," Lula said.
Vinny came running out of his office.
"Holy shit," he said. "What was that?"
He stopped and gaped at the fireball in front of his office.
"It's just another one of Stephanie's cars got blown up," Lula said. "It got bombed by a big rabbit."
"Don't you hate when that happens?"
Vinny said, and he went back into his office. Lula and Connie and I migrated out to the sidewalk and watched the car burn. A couple blue and white screamed onto the scene, followed by the EMT truck and, finally, two fire trucks. Carl Costanza got out of one of the blue and whites.
"Anyone hurt?"
"No."
"Good,"
he said, his face creasing into a grin.
"Then I can enjoy this. I miss the spiders and the guy on the couch."
Costanza's partner, Big Dog, ambled over.
"Way to go, Steph," he said. "We were all wondering when you'd trash another car. Can't hardly remember the last explosion."
Costanza bobbed his head in agreement.
"It's been months," he said.
I saw Morelli angle in behind a fire truck. He got out of his truck and walked over.
"Christ,"
he said, looking at what was fast becoming a charred hunk of scrap metal.
"It was Steph's car,"
Lula told him.
"It was firebombed by a big rabbit."
Morelli set his mouth to grim and glanced over at me.
"Is that true?"
"Lula saw it."
"I don't suppose you'd reconsider taking a vacation,"
Morelli said to me.
"Maybe go to Florida for a month or two?"
"I'll think about it," I said to Morelli, "as soon as I bring Andy Bender in." Morelli was still tuned to grim. I could bring him in easier if I had a pair of cuffs, I said. Morelli reached under a sweater and pulled out a pair of cuffs. He handed them to me wordlessly, his expression unchanged.
Kiss those cuffs goodbye,
Lula mumbled behind me. Generally speaking, a red Trans Am is not a good choice for a surveillance car. Fortunately, with Lula's newly bleached canary yellow hair and my extra heavy on the mascara eyes, we look like businesswomen who belonged in a red Trans Am on the street in front of Bender's house.
Now what? Lula asked. You have any ideas?
I had binoculars trained on Bender's front window. I think someone's in there, but I can't see enough to identify anyone.
We could call to see who answers,
Lula said.
Except I ran out of money for a cell phone, so I haven't got one no more, and your phone burned up in your car.
I guess we could go knock on the door.
Yeah, I like that idea. Maybe he'll shoot at us again. I was hoping someone would shoot at me today. That was the first thing I said when I got up. Boy, I hope I get shot at today.
He only shot at me that one time.
That makes me feel a lot better,
Lula said. Well, what's your idea?
My idea is we go home. I'm telling you, God don't want us to get this guy. He even sent a rabbit to bomb your car.
God didn't send a rabbit to bomb my car.
What's your explanation? You think it's every day you see a rabbit driving down the street?
I shoved the door open and got out of the Trans Am. I had the cuffs in one hand and pepper spray in the other. I'm in a bad mood, I told Lula. I'm up to here with snakes and spiders and dead guys, and now I don't even have a car. I'm going in, and I'm dragging Bender out, and after I drop his sorry ass off at the police station, I'm going to Chevy's, and I'm going to get one of those margaritas they make in the gallon-size glass.
Huh, Lula said. I guess you want me to go with you.
I was already halfway across the yard. Whatever, I said. Do whatever the hell you want. I could hear Lula huffing along behind me.
Don't you pull no attitude with me, she was saying. Don't you tell me to do whatever the hell I want. I already told you what I want. Did it count for anything? Hell no.
I got to Bender's front door, and I tried the knob. The door was locked. I knocked loud 3 times. There was no answer, so I banged 3 times with my fist. Open the door, I shouted. Bond enforcement. The door opened, and Bender's wife looked out at me.
This isn't a good time, she said.
I pushed her aside. It's never a good time.
Yes, but you don't understand. Andy is sick.
You expect us to believe that?
Lula said.
What do we look, stupid?
Bender lurched into the room. His hair was a wreck, and his eyes were half closed. He was wearing a pajama top and stained khaki work pants.
I'm dying, he said. I'm gonna die.
It's just the flu, his wife said. You should get back to bed.
Bender held his hands out.
Cuff me. Take me in. They got a doctor that comes around, right?
I put the cuffs on Bender and looked over at Lula. Is there a doctor?
They got a ward at St. Francis. I bet I got anthrax, Bender said, or smallpox. Whatever it is, it don't smell good,
Lula said.
I got diarrhea, and I'm throwing up,
Bender said.
I got a runny nose and a scratchy throat, and I think I got a fever. Feel my head. Yeah, right, Lula said. Looking forward to that opportunity.
He swiped at his nose with his sleeve and left a smear of snot on his pajama top. He hauled his head back and sneezed and sprayed half the room.
Hey, Lula yelled. Cover up. You never heard of a hanky? And what's with that sleeve thing? I'm gonna be sick, Bender said. I'm gonna puke again.
Get to the toilet, his wife yelled.
She grabbed a blue plastic bucket off the floor.
Use the bucket.
Bender stuck his head in the bucket and threw up.
Holy crap, Lula said. This is the house of plague. I'm out of here, and you're not putting him in my car either, she said to me. You want to take him in, you can call a cab.
Bender pulled his head out of the bucket and held his shackled hands out to me.
Okay, I'm better now. I'm ready to go.
Wait for me, I said to Lula. You were right about God.
It was a drive to get here, but it was worth it,
Lula said, licking salt off the rim of her glass.
This is the mother of all margaritas.
It's therapeutic, too. The alcohol will kill any germs we might have picked up from Bender.
Fucking A,
Lula said. I sipped my drink and looked around. The bar was filled with the after-work crowd. Most of them were my age, and most of them looked happier than me. My life sucks, I said to Lula.
You're just saying that because you had to watch Bender throw up in a bucket.
This was partially true. Bender throwing up in a bucket did nothing to enhance my mood. I'm thinking about getting a different job, I said. I want to work where these people work. They all look so happy.
That's because they got here ahead of us and they're all snockered.
Or it could be that none of them were being stalked by a maniac. I lost another pair of handcuffs, I said to Lula. I left them on Bender. Lula tipped her head back and burst out laughing.
And you want to change jobs, she said. Why would you want to do that when you're so good at this one?
It was 11 o'clock, and most houses on my parents' street were dark. The Berg was early to bed and early to rise.
Sorry about Bender,
Lula said, letting the Trans Am idle at the curb.
Maybe we could tell Vinny he died. We could say we were all set to bring Bender in, and he died. Bang, dead as a doorknob.
Better yet, why don't we just go back and kill him, I said.
I opened the door to leave, caught my toe in the floor mat, and fell out of the car, face first. I rolled onto my back and stared up at the stars.
I'm fine, I said to Lula. Maybe I'll sleep here tonight.
Ranger stepped into my line of sight, grabbed hold of my denim jacket, and pulled me to my feet.
Not a good idea, babe.
He looked over at Lula.
You can go now.
The Trans Am laid rubber and disappeared from view.
I'm not drunk, I said to Ranger. I only had one margarita.
His fingers were still curled into my jacket, but he softened his grip.
I understand you're having rabbit problems.
Fucking rabbit.
Ranger grinned.
You are definitely drunk.
I'm not drunk. I'm on the verge of being happy.
I didn't exactly have the whirlies, but the world wasn't totally in focus either. I leaned against Ranger for support.
What are you doing here?
He released my jacket and wrapped his arms around me.
I needed to talk to you.
You could have called.
I tried calling. Your phone isn't working.
Oh yeah, I forgot. It was in the car when the car blew up.
I did some investigating on Dottie and came up with some names to check out.
Now?
Tomorrow. I'll pick you up at 8.
I can't get into the bathroom until 9.
Okay. I'll pick you up at 9:30.
Are you laughing? I can feel you laughing. My life isn't funny.
Babe, your life should be a prime-time sitcom.
At precisely 9:30, I stumbled out the door and stood blinking in the sunlight. I'd managed a shower and I was fully clothed, but that was where it ended. A half hour isn't a lot of time for a girl to get beautiful, especially when the girl has a hangover. My hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and I had my lipstick in my jeans jacket pocket. When my hand stopped shaking and my eyeballs stopped being burning globes, I try putting lipstick on. Ranger rolled up in a shiny black Mercedes sedan and waited at the curb. Grandma was standing behind me on the other side of the door.
"I wouldn't mind seeing him naked," she said.
I slid onto the cream-colored leather seat beside Ranger, closed my eyes, and smiled. The car smelled wonderful, like leather and fries. "God bless you," I said. He had fries and a Coke waiting for me on the console.
"Tank and Lester are checking campgrounds in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. They're doing the closest ones first, and then moving out. They're looking for either of the cars, and they're talking to people when possible. We have your list of Evelyn's relatives, but I think they're long shots. Evelyn would worry that they'd get in touch with Mabel. The same goes for Dottie's relatives. There were four women Dottie was friendly with at work. I have their names and addresses. I think we should start with them."
"It's nice of you to help me with this. We aren't really employed by anyone. This is just an issue about Annie's safety."
"I'm not doing this for Annie's safety. This is about your safety. We need to get Abruzzi locked up. He's playing with you right now. When he stops enjoying the play, he's going to get serious. If the police can't tie him to Soder, Annie might be able to tie him to something. Multiple murders, maybe, if the drawings are from life."
"If we bring Annie in, can we keep her safe?"
"I can keep her safe until Abruzzi is sentenced. Keeping you safe is more difficult. As long as Abruzzi is at large, nothing short of locking you in the Batcave for the rest of your life will keep you safe."
The Batcave for the rest of my life. You said the Batcave has television, right? Ranger slid a sideways look my way.
"Eat your fries."
Barbara Ann Guzman was first on the list. She lived in a tract house in East Brunswick, in a pleasant neighborhood filled with middle-income families. Kathy Snyder, also on the list, lived two doors down. Both houses had attached garages. Neither of the garages had windows. Ranger parked in front of the Guzman house.
"Both women should be at work."
"Are we breaking in?"
"No. We're knocking on the door, hoping we hear kids inside."
We knocked twice, and we didn't hear kids. I squeezed behind an azalea and peeked in Barbara Ann's front window. Lights off, television off, no little shoes laying discarded on the floor. We walked two houses down to Kathy Snyder. We rang the bell, and an older woman answered. "I'm looking for Kathy," I said to the woman.
"She's at work," the woman said. "I'm her mother. Can I help you?"
Ranger passed the woman a stack of photos.
"Have you seen any of these people?"
"This is Dottie," the woman said, "and her friend. They spent the night with Barbara Ann. Do you know Barbara Ann?"
"Barbara Ann Guzman," Ranger said.
"Yes. Not last night. They were here the night before. A real full house for Barbara Ann."
"Does you know where they are now?"
She looked at the photo and shook her head.
"No. Kathy might know. I just saw them because I was walking. I walk around the block every night for a little exercise, and I saw them drive up."
"Does you remember the car?" Ranger asked.
"It was just a regular car. Blue, I think."
She looked from Ranger to me.
"Is something wrong?"
"The one woman, Dottie's friend, has had some bad luck, and we're trying to help her straighten things out," I said. The third woman lived in an apartment building in New Brunswick. We drove through the underground garage, methodically going up and down rows, looking for Dottie's blue Honda or Evelyn's gray Sentra. We scored a goose egg on that, so we parked and took the elevator to the sixth floor. We knocked on Pauline Wood's door and got no answer. We tried neighboring apartments, but no one responded. Ranger knocked one last time on Pauline's door and then let himself in. I stayed outside doing lookout. 5 minutes later, Ranger was back in the hall, Pauline's door locked behind him.
"The apartment was clean," he said.
Nothing to indicate Dottie was there. No forwarding address for her displayed in a prominent place.
We left the parking garage and drove through town on our way to Highland Park. New Brunswick is a college town, with Rutgers at the one end and Douglas College at the other. I graduated from Douglas without distinction. I was in the top 98% of my class and damn glad to be there. I slept in the library and daydreamed my way through history lecture. I failed math twice, never fully grasping probability theory. I mean, first off, who cares if you pick a black ball or a white ball out of the bag? And second, if you're bent over about the color, don't leave it to chance. Look in the damn bag and pick the color you want. By the time I reached college age, I'd given up all hope of flying like Superman, but I was never able to develop a burning desire for an alternative occupation. When I was a kid, I read Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge comics. Uncle Scrooge was always going off to exotic places in search of gold. After Scrooge got the gold, he'd take it back to his money bin and push his loose change around with a bulldozer. Now this was my idea of a good job. Go on an adventure, bring back gold, push it around with a bulldozer. How fun is this? So you can possibly see the reason for my lack of motivation to get grades. I mean, do you really need good grades to drive a bulldozer? I went to college here, I said to Ranger. It's been a bunch of years, but I still feel like a student when I ride through town.
Were you a good student?
I was a terrible student. Somehow the state managed to educate me in spite of myself. Did you go to college?
Rutgers, Newark. Joined the army after 2 years.
When I first met Ranger, I would have been surprised by this. Now, nothing surprised me about Ranger.
The last woman on the list should be at work, but her husband should be at home, Ranger said. He works food service for the university and goes in at 4. The guy's name is Harold Bailey. His wife's name is Louise.
We wound our way through a neighborhood of older homes. They were mostly two-story clapboards with the front porch stretching the width of the house and a single detached garage to the rear. They weren't big, and they weren't small. Many had been badly renovated with fake brick front or add-on front rooms made by enclosing the porch. We parked and approached the Bailey house. Ranger rang the bell, and just as he expected, a man answered the door. Ranger introduced himself and handed the man the photographs.
We're looking for Evelyn Soder, Ranger said. We were hoping you might be able to help. Have you seen any of these people in the last couple days?
Why are you looking for this Soder woman?
Her ex-husband has been killed. Evelyn has been moving around lately, and her grandmother has lost touch with her. She'd like to make sure Evelyn knows about the death.
She was here with Dottie last night. They came just as I was leaving. They stayed overnight and left in the morning. I didn't see much of them. And I don't know where they were off to today. They were taking the little girls on some sort of field trip. Historical places, that sort of thing. Louise might know more. You could try reaching her at work.
We returned to the car, and Ranger took us out of the neighborhood. We're always one step behind, I said.
That's the way it is with missing children. I've worked a lot of parental abduction cases, and they move around. Usually they go farther from home, and usually they stay in one place longer than a night. But the pattern is the same. By the time information on them comes in, they're usually gone.
How do you catch them?
Persistence and patience. If you stick with it long enough, eventually you win. Sometimes it takes years.
Oh my God, I haven't got years. I'll have to hide in the Batcave.
Once you go into the Batcave, it's forever, babe.
Eek.
Try calling the women, Ranger said. The work number is in the file.
Barbara Ann and Kathy were cautious. Both admitted that they'd seen Dottie and Evelyn and knew they were also visiting Louise. Both insisted they didn't know where the women were going next. I suspected they were telling the truth. I thought it was possible Evelyn and Dottie were only thinking a day ahead. My best guess was that they'd intended to camp, and for some reason that hadn't worked out. Now they were scrambling to stay hidden.
Pauline had been entirely out of the loop. Louise was the most talkative, probably because she was also the most worried.
"They would only stay the one night," she said.
"I know what you're telling me about Evelyn's husband is true, but I know there's more. The kids were exhausted and wanted to go home. Evelyn and Dottie looked exhausted, too. They wouldn't talk about it, but I know they were running away from something. I was thinking it was Evelyn's husband, but I guess that's not it." "Holy Mother of God," she said. "You don't suppose they killed him?"
"No," I said. "He was killed by a rabbit. One more thing. Did you see the car they were driving? Were they all in one car?"
"It was Dottie's car, the blue Honda. Apparently Evelyn had a car, but it was stolen when they left it at a campground. She said they went out grocery shopping, and when they came back, the car and everything they owned was gone. Can you imagine?"
I gave her my home phone number and asked her to call if she thought of anything that might be helpful. "Dead end," I said to Ranger. "But I know why they vacated the campground." I told him about the stolen car.
"The more likely scenario is that Dottie and Evelyn came back after shopping, saw a strange car parked next to Evelyn's, and they abandoned everything," Ranger said.
"And when they didn't return, Abruzzi cleaned them out."
"It's what I'd do," Ranger said. "Anything to slow them down and make things difficult."
We were driving through Highland Park, approaching the bridge over the Raritan River. We were out of Leeds again, but at least we'd gotten some information. We didn't know where Evelyn was now, but we knew where she'd been, and we knew she no longer had the Sentra. Ranger stopped for a light and turned to me.
"When was the last time you shot a gun?"
he asked. "A couple days ago. I shot a snake. Is this a trick question?"
"This is a serious question. You should be carrying a gun, and you should feel comfortable shooting it."
"Okay, I promise next time I go out, I'll take my gun with me."
"You'll put bullets in it?"
I hesitated. Ranger glanced over at me.
"You will put bullets in it."
"Sure," I said. He reached out, opened the glove compartment, and took out a gun. It was a Smith & Wesson 38 five-shot special. It looked a lot like my gun.
"I stopped by her apartment this morning and picked this up for you," Ranger said. "I found it in the cookie jar."
"Tough guys always keep their gun in the cookie jar."
"Name one."
"Rockford." Ranger grinned.
"I stand corrected."
He took a road that ran along the river, and after a half mile, he turned into a parking area that led to a large warehouse-type building. "What's this?" I asked.
"Shooting gallery. You're going to practice using your gun."
I knew this was necessary, but I hated the noise, and I hated the mechanics of the gun. I didn't like the idea that I was holding a device that essentially created small explosions. I was always sure something would go wrong and I'd blow my thumb clear off my hand. Ranger got me outfitted with ear protectors and goggles. He laid out the rounds and set the gun on the shelf in my assigned space. He brought the paper target in to 20 feet. If I was ever going to shoot someone, chances were good they'd be close to me.
"Okay, Tex," he said. "Let's see what you've got."
I loaded and fired.
"Good," Ranger said. "Let's try it with your eyes open this time."
He adjusted my grip and my stance. I tried again.
"Better,"
Ranger said. I practiced until my arm ached and I couldn't pull the trigger anymore.
"How does you feel about the gun now?" Ranger asked.
"I feel more comfortable, but I still don't like it."
"You don't have to like it."
It was late afternoon when we left the gallery, and we ran into rush hour traffic going back through town. I have no patience for traffic. If I was driving, I'd be cussing and banging my head against the steering wheel. Ranger was unfazed, in his zone, zen calm. Several times I could swear he stopped breathing. When we hit gridlock approaching Trenton, Ranger took an exit, cut down a side street, and parked in a small lot set between brick storefront businesses and three-story row houses. The street was narrow and felt dark, even during daylight hours. Storefront windows were dirty with faded displays. Black spray-painted graffiti covered the first-floor fronts of the row houses. If at that very moment someone staggered out of a row house, blood gushing from bullet holes in multiple places on his body, it wouldn't take me by surprise. I peered out the windshield and bit into my lower lip. We aren't going to the Batcave, are we?
No, babe. We're going to Shorty's for pizza.
A small neon sign hung over the door of the building adjoining the lot. Sure enough, the sign said Shorty's. The two small windows in the front of the building had been blacked out with paint. The door was heavy wood and windowless. I looked over my shoulder at Ranger.
The pizza is good here?
I tried not to let my voice waver, but it sounded squeezed and far away in my head. It was the voice of fear. Maybe fear is too strong a word. After the past week, maybe fear should be reserved for life-threatening situations. But then again, maybe fear was appropriate.
The pizza is good here,
Ranger said, and he pushed the door open for me. The sudden wash of noise and pizza fumes almost knocked me to my knees. It was dark inside Shorty's, and it was packed. Booths lined the walls, and tables cluttered the middle of the room. An old-fashioned jukebox blasted out music from a far corner. Mostly there were men in Shorty's. The women who were there looked like they could hold their own. The men were in work boots and jeans. They were old and young, their faces lined from years of sun and cigarettes. They looked like they didn't need gun instruction. We got a booth in a corner that was dark enough not to be able to see bloodstains or roaches. Ranger looked comfortable, his back to the wall, black shirt blending into the shadows. The waitress was dressed in a white Shorty's t-shirt and a short black skirt. She had big hooters, a lot of brown curly hair, and more mascara than I'd ever managed, even on my most insecure day. She smiled at Ranger like she knew him better than I did.
What'll it be?
She asked.
Pizza and beer, Ranger said.
Do you come here a lot? I asked him.
Often enough. We keep a safe house in the neighborhood. Half the people in here are local. Half come from a truck stop on the next block.
The waitress dropped cardboard coasters on the scarred wood table and put a frosted glass of beer on each. I thought you didn't drink, I said to Ranger. You know, the body is a temple thing. And now wine at my apartment and beer at Shorty's?
I don't drink when I'm working, and I don't get drunk. And the body is only a temple 4 days a week.
Wow, I said. You're going to hell in a handbasket, eating pizza and boozing it up 3 days a week. I thought I noticed a little extra fat around the middle. Ranger raised an eyebrow.
A little extra fat around the middle. Anything else?
Maybe the beginnings of a double chin. Truth is, Ranger didn't have fat anywhere. Ranger was perfect, and we both knew it. He drank some beer and studied me.
Don't you think you're taking a chance baiting me when I'm the only thing standing between you and the guy at the bar with the snake tattooed on his forehead?
I looked at the guy with the snake. He seems like a nice guy.
Nice for a homicidal maniac.
Ranger smiled.
He works for me.
Chapter 12. The sun was setting when we got back to the car. That was possibly the best pizza I've ever had, I said to Ranger. Overall, it was a frightening experience, but the pizza was great.
Shorty makes it himself.
Does Shorty work for you, too?
Yeah. He caters all my cocktail parties.
More Ranger humor. At least, I was pretty sure it was humor. Ranger reached Hamilton Avenue and glanced over at me.
Where are you staying tonight?
My parents' house. He turned into the burg.
I'll have Tank drop a car off for you. You can use it until you replace the CRV, or until you destroy it.
Where do you get all these cars from?
You don't actually want to know, do you?
I took a beat to think about it. No, I said. I don't suppose I do. If I knew, you'd have to kill me, right?
Something like that.
He stopped in front of my parents' house, and we both looked to the door. My mother and my grandmother were standing there, watching us.
I'm not sure I feel comfortable about the way your grandma looks at me,
Ranger said. She wants to see you naked.
I wish you hadn't told me that, babe.
Everyone I know wants to see you naked.
And you?
Never crossed my mind. I held my breath when I said it, and I hoped God didn't strike me down dead for lying. I hopped out of the car and ran inside. Grandma Mazur was waiting for me in the foyer.
The darndest thing happened this afternoon, she said. I was walking home from the bakery, and a car pulled up alongside me, and there was a rabbit in it. He was driving, and he handed me one of them post office mailing envelopes, and he said I should give the envelope to you. It all happened so fast, and as soon as he drove away, I remembered that it was a rabbit that set fire to your car. Do you think it could be the same rabbit?
Ordinarily, I would have asked questions. What kind of car, and did you get the plate? In this case, the questions were useless. The cars were always different, and they were always stolen. I took the sealed envelope from her, carefully opened it, and looked inside. Photos. Snapshots of me, sleeping on my parents' couch. They were taken last night. Someone had let themselves into the house and stood there watching me sleep, and then photographed me, all without my knowledge. Whoever it was had picked a good night. I'd slept like the dead thanks to the giant margarita and the sleepless night before.
What's in the envelope? Grandma wanted to know. Looks like photographs.
Nothing very interesting, I said. I think it was a prank rabbit. My mother looked like she knew better, but she didn't say anything. By the end of the night, we'll have a fresh batch of cookies and she'll have done all the ironing. That's my mother's form of stress management. I borrowed the Buick and I drove to Morelli's house. He lived just outside the Berg, in a neighborhood closely resembling the Berg, less than a quarter mile from my parents. He'd inherited the house from his aunt, and it turned out to be a good fit. Life is surprising. Joe Morelli, the scourge of Trenton High, biker, babe magnet, barroom brawler, now a semi-respectable property owner. Somehow, over the years, Morelli had grown up. No small feat for a male member of that family. Bob rushed at me when he saw me at the door. His eyes were happy, and he pranced around and wagged his tail. Morelli was more contained.
What's up?
Morelli said, checking out my T-shirt. Something very creepy just happened to me.
Boy, that's a surprise.
Creepier than normal.
Do I need a drink before you tell me this?
I handed him the photos.
Nice, he said, but I've seen you sleep on several occasions.
These were taken last night without my knowledge. A big rabbit stopped Grandma on the street today and told her to give these to me. He raised his eyes to look at me.
Are you telling me someone let themselves into your parents' house and took these pictures while you were asleep?
Yes. I'd been trying to stay calm, but deep inside, I was ruined. The idea that someone, Abruzzi himself or one of his men, had stood over me and watched me sleep had me completely unnerved. I felt violated and vulnerable.
This guy has a lot of balls,
Morelli said. His voice was calm enough when he said it, but the line of his mouth tightened, and I knew he was struggling to control his anger. A younger Morelli would have thrown a chair through a window. I don't mean to be critical of the Trenton police, I said, but wouldn't you think someone could catch this goddamn rabbit? He's riding around handing out photos.
Were the doors locked last night?
Yes.
What kind of lock?
A deadbolt.
It doesn't take an expert long to open a deadbolt. Can you get your parents to put a security chain on?
I can try. I don't want to scare them with these photos. They love their house and they feel safe there. I don't want to take that away from them.
Yes, but you're being stalked by a crazy person.
We were standing in the small front hall, and Bob was pressing against me, snuffling into my leg. I looked down, and there was a big wet spot of Bob drool just above my knee. I scratched the top of his head and ruffled his ears. I need to get out of my parents' house. Take the action away from them.
You know you can stay here.
And endanger you?
I'm used to being endangered.
This was true. But this was also the basis for almost every argument we had, and it was the primary reason for our breakup. That and my inability to commit. Morelli didn't want a bounty hunter wife. He didn't want the mother of his children regularly dodging bullets. I guess I can't blame him. Thanks, I said. I might take you up on it. I can also ask Ranger to put me in one of his safe houses, or I can return to my apartment. If I go back to my apartment, I need to have a security system installed. I don't want to come home to any more surprises. Unfortunately, I didn't have the money for a security system. As it was, it didn't matter because I couldn't bring myself to come within 50 feet of the cootie couch.
What are you going to do tonight?
I need to stay in my parents' house and make sure no one breaks in again. Tomorrow, I'll move out. I think they'll be safe once I'm gone.
You're going to stay up all night?
Yep. You could come over later if you want, and we could play Monopoly. Morelli grinned.
Monopoly, huh? How could I pass that one up? What time does your grandmother go to bed?
After the 11 o'clock news.
I'll be over around 12.
I fiddled with Bob's ear.
What?
Morelli asked. It's about us.
There's no us.
It feels like there's some us.
This is what I think. I think there's you and me, and sometimes we're together. But there's no us.
That feels a little lonely, I said.
Don't make this more difficult than it already is,
Morelli said. I packed myself off in the Buick and went in search of a toy store. An hour later, I was done with my shopping, back in the car, heading for home. I stopped for a light on Hamilton, and a split second later, I was rear-ended. Not a big crash, more like a bump. Enough to make the Buick sway, but not enough to push me. My first reaction was my mother's standard reply to anything that was going to make her life more complicated.
Why me?
I doubted there was much damage, but it was going to be a pain in the ass all the same. I yanked the emergency brake on and put the Buick in park. Probably I needed to go out and do the examine for dents bullshit. I blew out a sigh and looked in my rearview mirror. I couldn't see much in the dark, but what I could see wasn't good. I saw ears, big rabbit ears on the guy in the driver's seat. I swiveled in my seat and squinted out the rear window. The rabbit backed his car up about 10 feet and rammed me again, harder this time, enough to make the Buick jump forward. Shit! I released the brake, put the Buick in gear, and took off through the red light. The rabbit was close behind. I turned at Chambers Street and ran up and down streets until I slid to a stop in front of Morelli's house. I saw no lights behind me, but that didn't guarantee that the rabbit was gone. He could have cut his lights and parked. I jumped out of the Buick, ran to Morelli's front door, and rang the bell. Then I pounded on the door, and then I yelled, "Open up!" Morelli opened the door, and I jumped inside. "The rabbit is after me," I said. Morelli stuck his head out and looked up and down the street.
"I don't see any rabbits."
"He was in a car. He rear-ended me on Hamilton, and then he chased me here."
"What kind of car?"
"I don't know. I couldn't see in the dark. I could just see his ears sticking up over the wheel." My heart was racing, and I was having a hard time catching my breath. I'm losing it, I said. This guy's really pushing my buttons. A rabbit, for Christ's sake. What kind of a mind would think to have me stalked by a rabbit? Of course, while I was ranting on about the rabbit and the diabolical mind, I was remembering that it was partially my fault. I was the one who told Abruzzi I liked bunnies.
We didn't advertise the fact that a rabbit was involved in the Soder murder, so chances of it being a copycat are slim, Morelli said. If we're going on the assumption that Abruzzi is behind this, then the mind in question is pretty sharp. Abruzzi isn't known for being stupid.
Just crazy?
As crazy as they come. From what I hear, he collects memorabilia and then wears it when he's war gaming. Dresses himself up like Napoleon.
The idea of Abruzzi dressed up like Napoleon got me smiling. He would look ridiculous, second only to the guy in the rabbit suit. The rabbit must have been following me from my parents' house, I said to Morelli.
Where did you go when you left here?
I went to buy Monopoly. I got the old-fashioned traditional Monopoly. And I'm going to be the race car. Morelli took Bob's leash off a hook in the hall and grabbed a jacket.
I'll go back with you, but you have to relinquish the race car to me if Grandma plays. It's the least you can do for me.
At 4 o'clock, I woke up with a start. I was on the couch with Morelli. I'd fallen asleep, sitting up with his arm around me. I'd lost 2 games of Monopoly, and we turned to television. The television was off now, and Morelli was slouched back with his gun on the coffee table next to his cell phone. Lights were off, with the exception of the overhead light in the kitchen. Bob was sound asleep on the floor.
Someone's out there, Morelli said. I called for a car.
Is it the rabbit?
I don't know. I don't want to go to the window and frighten whoever it is away until backup gets here. They tried the door once, then walked around back and tried that door.
I don't hear any sirens.
They won't come with sirens, he whispered. I got Mickey Lauder. I told him to come in an unmarked car and come in on foot.
There was a muffled crash from the back of the house and a lot of shouting. Morelli and I ran to the back and flipped the porch light on. Mickey Lauder in 2 uniforms had 2 people down on the ground.
Christ, Morelli said, grinning. It's your sister and Albert Clown.
Mickey Lauder was grinning, too. He dated Valerie in high school.
Sorry, he said, hauling her to her feet. I didn't recognize you at first. You've changed your hair.
Are you married?
Valerie asked.
Yeah, big time. I've got 4 kids.
Just curious, Valerie said on a sigh.
Clown was still on the ground.
I'm pretty sure she didn't do anything illegal, he said. She couldn't get in. The doors were locked and she didn't want to wake anybody. It wouldn't have been breaking and entering, right? You can break into your own house, right? I mean, that's what you have to do if you forget your key, right?
I saw you go to bed with the kids, I said to Valerie. How'd you get out here?
The same way you used to sneak out when you were in high school,
Morelli said, the grin getting wider.